This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And here we are live. I'm always waiting for that thumbs up from Mark, our producer on Pet Life Radio. And so anyway, welcome to this glorious Sunday. Happy Easter. And we're going to talk about some of the Easter potential dangers and when everybody gets ready to sign on. So here I am live. You get to talk to me, ask anything you want to do. Easy way to get a hold of me is, well, first of all, if you're here on Pet Life Radio, you're here. So just go ahead and ask away. Instagram, you can just type in your questions. Difficult to share the screen because with my sort of very lousy skills at navigating Instagram, I don't know how to get rid of it. So it's just better yet, ask away. So 877-385-8882. If you want to call, good old-fashioned way, 877-385-8882. Hope all is well. As I said, happy Easter Sunday. Now, a couple of things about Easter. As we know, a lot of Easter egg hunts, chicks, bunnies. And so my warnings are, if they're chocolate, good for your kids, save some for me, but not good for your pets. So if you have dogs, we'll obviously love to unwrap anything. And some don't even bother unwrapping. They just eat everything. So go ahead, be careful with the chocolate eggs, the chocolate bunnies, et cetera. If the real bunnies, you know, it's funny, there are some rescues that specialize in bunnies. And they always say that Easter is not a good time. Why? Because so many people, first of all, they are adorable. No doubt about it. And I don't know, have you ever had bunnies as a pet? I never have. My daughter has. But it takes some getting used to. There's a lot of things you need to know, from feeding to husbandry care, the hutches, how to keep them, where to keep them, the fact they love to chew on wires. So you need to be really well-educated. You need to know. And if that's all good, then go for it. But I will tell you, according to these bunny rescues, they say that right after Easter, within weeks and months after Easter, they get inundated with bunnies that need to be rehomed. So if you're experienced, that's great. If you want to give it a shot and you really did your homework first, then that's great as well. But don't just go out and get honey bunnies because you think they're cute. They are cute, but there's more to it than just that. So beware, everybody, please. But anyway, have a great day. Yes, we have to talk about coyotes. My sister Bethany is telling me, I'm telling you, they are bold. We're going to talk about that as well. Anyway, on other news, as you know, I was back at the Global Pet Expo, which was great in Orlando. This past Tuesday, I had grandchild number 6, a little boy, another boy. And if all goes well in August, I'm going to have another boy. So yeah, it's a lot of, the first two were girls and everything said were boys. So a lot of fun and all is good. I was at my daughter's house last night and helping take care of the little one. I mean, it's so adorable. So adorable. So let's get going. I have to say, I had to say goodbye to an amazing dog, actually Friday. Name was Carbon. Thank you for thanking me. I have to tell you that it is really tough. This dog was so sweet and unfortunately had a mass that it was time. And the poor thing. And, you know, it's like, why do bad things happen to such sweet dogs? You know, we always ask that. And it turns out that it just, you know, I hate to say it, but poop does happen. Fortunately, it was an older dog. And, but anyway, still, they're never told. It's like, I always tell my clients, even though you know you're doing the right thing, and there comes a time. I mean, reality check is that unless you get a dog when you are 90 or a parrot when you're 50, chances are they're going to outlive you, but usually we're going to outlive them. So we're always going to be faced with that very challenging decision. You know, it's the right thing to do, but it doesn't make it any easier. It's a reality. And what I tell all my clients is that I've experienced this. Obviously, I have, you know, 4 or 5 dogs at a time. I have 5 right now. That there is no better therapy than filling that void with another dog. My son and daughter-in-law, in fact, I was there at their house this morning for coffee. They just adopted a 8-month-old golden retriever that is absolutely stunning. The most mellow, beautiful. We had to put their Frenchie of almost 14 years to sleep. And it was about 2 months ago. And obviously their surviving Frenchie was very lonely. Well, they fill the void. This dog is unbelievable. It was a beautiful purebred golden. They got a golden retriever rescue that was sitting the last several months in a hospital cage in a run at a hospital because the dog had epilepsy. It's been untreated. It has not had a seizure since September. The dog is perfect. And they drove an hour and a half and they picked this dog up. He is absolutely magnificent. Great with their kids. They're the ones that are going to have a third boy in August. And he and the Frenchie get along. It's amazing. Just to tell you how many fantastic dogs are out there that are waiting for homes. And if you remember the statistic we talked about a couple of weeks ago, almost over 700,000 dogs and cats put to sleep every year in our pounds and shelters, et cetera, because of no space. And then when some people come to me and they have an intact dog, not a champion, just a regular intact dog, and they think, wouldn't it be nice to breed? It would be good for the kids to see. No, you want to get a video if you want the kids to see it. It's not worth it to have bring in these more lives when there are so many dogs that need good, good homes. So my sister Bethany, we talked about it this week. Hi, JB. Talked about it this week about coyotes. And I have to tell you, she had an experience and I had a somewhat, certainly not as frightening, but you have to understand that in many areas where we see coyotes, and we see a lot of them here in the West Side, we have invaded their space. There is building going on up in Mulholland, up in the mountains, and we are encroaching more and more on their areas, leaving them basically homeless or limited food supply. And so what are they doing? They're coming down. And I remember when we were in Beverly Hills, we were renting while we were remodeling, we would see them in the street. Here we see them literally down Beverly Drive, right here, Beverly Drive, in 2-3 at a time pack. So my sister was walking her dogs and all of a sudden there were two coyotes, she said, that would, I mean, they were literally ready to circle. And she's screaming at them and she's waving her hands and get away. They were unfazed, absolutely unfazed. And they are getting more and more bold because they are hungry. And it's a problem. It really is a problem. And I was telling her a story, speaking of up in Mulholland, where they used to live. And I was going to someone's house and I saw a coyote. And as soon as I got out of my car, it started running away. But it didn't keep running. It went to the edge of the street where the kind of the wooded area started, the forested area. And it just sat there and watched me. And I was waving my hands and I was trying to scare it. It just didn't give a damn. It was just sitting there and just watching me. Wanted to see what my next move was going to be. Of course, I went into the house. So they are getting really bold. So be careful if you have small dogs, if you have cats, you want to make sure because they will jump fences and they will go for a meal. And it's frightening. And when I walk my dogs, I'm walking five. They're not that bold. So they will run. And if you make a lot of noise, wave your hands. And one of my dogs is a big dog. So as a warning, beware that if you have coyotes, if you see them, if you hear of them in your area, then please exercise caution. All right. Next up, I'm waving. Other than that, I've got this new device. I have to talk about it because I'm so thrilled. And for those of you, you need to talk to your veterinarians about this. I saw it initially when I was at the VMX in Orlando in January. And it was a very busy show. And I was kind of moving around so much, stopped for a second, listened, but didn't get to see it in action. Then when I was at Western in February, a month later, I had a chance to really visit. It is a device. It's called the HT Vista. I'm going to post about it because it's fascinating. So what it is a little probe that you place onto a dog's mass. If you have any kind of skin or subcutaneous, if it's in the body, it's not going to work. It's got to be close to the skin or on the skin itself. So what you can do, you take this probe and you place it where part of the probe is on the mass and part is on normal skin. You have to catch normal skin in the probe itself as well, in the study. You hold it there, and for about 15 seconds, it emits a heat, and then the heat turns off, and then it's measuring how the heat exchange takes place, how fast it loses its heat compared to the normal skin. That's why you need to get normal skin under the probe as well. And then, based on algorithms, based on AI, and thousands upon thousands of cases, it then will give you a percent of the likelihood that the mass is benign. And it scores on a scale of 1 to 10. 5 to 10 says you have a 90% chance or greater that what you're feeling, the mass, is benign because it matches what they've learned from the normal skin. If it rates 1 to 4, that means there's less than a 90% chance it's benign, which means it's a higher percent of, doesn't want to say malignant, just not benign. So we got the machine about 2 weeks ago. We were trained initially, just learning how to, you know, basically simple stuff. But now we learned how to use it Monday. We had a morning session with my crew. The technology and the machine comes out of Israel, and which is one of the tech capitals of the world. And it is amazing. So I've done 10 scans in the week. And I did one of my own dogs. It came back in 9, which is, I wasn't worried. I kind of knew it wasn't, but I wanted to see it in action. And we've had a 2, we've had a 1, and I recently on Friday had a 4. So it's not guaranteeing that it's a malignant cancer. It's just not benign. So we've scheduled all of them for surgery. And of course, we are going to do a biopsy. Now, this is very important to know, and I'll tell you why. Typically, before we had a machine like this HT Vista, it's called the HT Vista, the way to would a diagnose would be to stick a needle into it and try to capture some cells. Okay, there's a cost there. And then you have to submit it to the lab for cytology, and that's a bigger cost. And often, when it comes to trying to aspirate representative cells in a mass, it'll come back inconclusive. Or you might just get fat, because there's always fat in the skin. So it doesn't give you a lot of confidence. So what are you going to do? You're either going to sit on it anyway, or you're going to then, well, you know what? Inconclusive, let's take it. All right. And then you take it off, and then you have it biopsied. Well, this can skip that step of unsurety, if that's a word, because you know that with a higher likelihood that it's not benign, then you know it might be something. You can do it in office. The whole test takes 2-3 minutes, and you can tell the client with more confidence, not that it's malignant, you don't want to scare them, but it doesn't have the characteristics of being just benign. Let's remove it now. Whereas if it does come back benign, now it's an elective procedure. You might want to wait till the next dentistry. You can sit back and relax a little bit. And I think it's amazing. So it's one of those things where there are so many cases we have where we are not sure. And this sort of resolves a lot of those questions. Let's see. Good morning. 12-year-old boxers, a couple of warts. Can they be removed with local anesthesia? Okay. So the short answer is yes. It all depends where they are. Oftentimes, even with local anesthesia, it's probably not a bad idea to give some mild relaxant, a sedative, some Torbigesics for pain, maybe a little what we call Tilazol, even IV ACE or Valium, just something to kind of bring them down a little bit. And then we do a ring block with our local anesthetic agent, like a lidocaine. And then we can remove the warts, usually with either electrosurgery or laser surgery. And they do very, very well. Any small topical mass, whether it's a wart, skin tag, a little mole, a cyst, you can actually do it that way. And also, a lot depends on the dog. If the dog is going to be a wild, crazy dog, you may not be able to, then you're going to want to do anesthesia. Now, there are some great anesthetic agents also, if the dog is healthy, where it's a combination for dextromethorphan and antacidine. You can actually, it puts them down deep enough to actually deep sedation, maybe mild anesthesia, if you want to call it. But the beauty is, then when you're done, you can reverse it. And you reverse it with the antacidine, and literally, they get up in like 2 minutes. It's as if you never did anything. So that is an alternative. Okay. Wants to know, did I buy? And no, they send it to you, and you can either, well, now they're doing something new. You can buy it, which I probably will, now that I've seen how it works, how easy it is, and how it's much less expensive than doing an aspirate and sending it to lab for cytology, giving peace of mind, and also helping direct where you need to go with this mass, whether it's something we need to do urgently or something we just kind of wait until we have a better reason to actually anesthetize. But right now they're doing it as a lease, and it is very reasonable. Really, I look at it as a convenience. The fact that it is much less expensive than it would be to do the cytology, and you get a better result with cytology of masses. I've never been a fan. I always say to the owner who says, can we just test it first? I said, let me ask you a question. Do you want it there? Let's say you knew it was still benign. You're going to sit there and do you want it, run or not want it? Most of them say if it's really ugly, if, for example, a cyst or something that's hard or changing or growing fast, you want it off anyway. So why waste the money on a cytology where very often you might get an inconclusive answer? So this way, you're just doing it and you have a better reason to remove it now. Or if you want to wait a little bit and be a little bit more conservative, you can, but you already know what you're dealing with. You know what? It's interesting. When you go to, I'll be at Super Zoo this year, and I just came back from Global. The amount of technology going into products is unreal. There was one, I think it was called by Doku, or they called it Dooku, but it's D-O-K-O-O. And the one that intrigued me, it looks like a big bullet, okay? You set it on a tabletop, it's got a camera, and it's got a little hole below the camera. And what's that hole for? You fill it with treats. You can call your dog over because they can hear. It's got a speaker. And then you can see them from the camera. You can do all this all on your iPhone. And you're sitting there and you're watching the dog. You can see him sitting here and you can say, oh my God, good boy. And you can hit a little button on your phone and it pops out a treat. It throws a treat at them. So it's like, oh my God, you get to reward your pets for behaving so nicely and you're not even there. And it just keeps them happy. They'll sit in front of that thing. You can walk by it and just like I said, turn your phone on, your smartphone thing in. You'll see the dog sitting there. He knows he wants to, you tell him to do, give me a paw or sit. And he sits, you pop a treat at him. I think it's fascinating. They also have a really good automatic feeder. Automatic feeders are more common. I saw a number of them at the show, many really good ones. The problem with some of the automatic feeders is that if it's doing it automatically and you have multiple pets, then the wrong pet might be going near it. Now, the other thing is some of the pets that have these little medallions, some of these automatic feeders, and the door flap only opens when the right animal comes by. So if you, for example, you have one of your pets is on a special diet and you don't want the other pets eating it, then you wait until the pet that has the medallion on his collar, then it opens up for that pet. The problem with that is if you have multiple pets, it might be a little more challenging unless you get one for each pet. And then you can give each one their own little tag that comes with the machine. And then each one has the ability to turn on that machine. But then it gets pretty expensive. These things are not cheap. I mean, for one or two pets, or if both pets are on a special diet or only one is, it's great. Okay, stenting. Oh, we're going to talk about that. That's a great question. I'll tell you what, that's such a good question that we are going to save it until after our commercial break. I'm saying hi and waving to everybody. Oh my God, all the waves. I love it. I love it. So all those waving, I'm sure you must have a question. But when we come back from break, we're going to talk about tracheal collapse. So don't go away. We'll be back after these short messages here on Pet Life Radio and IG Live.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back here live on Pet Life Radio and Instagram. So I wanted to talk about this collapsing trachea. And it is a problem that we see more typically in small breeds. And it sounds like these dogs are honking, trying to cough up a bone. Seems to be worse again, like almost like a kennel cough, early morning, late night with excitement. And it's painful to listen to. But how dangerous is it? Well, let's put it this way. I'm soon to finish my 40th year of practice. And in those 40 years, I've only had to put two dogs to sleep because of severe collapsing trachea. So more of the times you hear it, it sounds terrible and they're honking and it's like they're trying to breathe, but it's interesting. The more they try to breathe, right? Because the collapse, the more it sucks. It's like you get the effect of like trying to, you know, like the tracheal rings are already somewhat compromised. They are not holding the shape of the trachea. And therefore, the tracheal tissue is now much more floppy. So let's talk about the stents. One of my former technicians who went on to vet school, and she then, when I followed up with her over after vet school, and she was doing a surgical residency, and she did her surgical residency. She's now a board-certified veterinary surgeon. And so I asked her, you know, what are you working on? You know, a lot of times when you're doing a residency, you have a project. What was her project? Her project was collapsing trachea. And they had a technique they were working on for the stent, et cetera, et cetera. And when I followed up with her about a year, 2 years later, just to say hi, I said, by the way, how was that thing going with the collapsing trachea? She said, no go. So here's what happens. There are two issues. Number one is if you put a stent inside the trachea, the center of the trachea, then what it's doing, it's putting pressure against the walls of the trachea, which is already very sensitive tissue. And it turns out to compromise the blood supply to the trachea itself. And it makes it even worse. The trachea literally can start to becoming like necrotic because of lack of blood supply. Now, let's talk about the kind of stent they would put in where it would be around the trachea on the outside. And it would like you attach the trachea through sutures around the circumference of the trachea into this mesh device on the outside wall. Well, there they found that where you actually put the sutures to tie it, then at those points, you have some necrosis, you have loss of blood supply. And that turns out to be a disaster. So far, to my knowledge, most of the boarded surgeons that I know are not trying to surgically repair tracheas. It seems like they ultimately will fail for whatever reason. So my recommendation is that most of the time, high 90%, it's not going to be fatal. It is painful to listen to. Treat medically with cough suppressants, maybe some mild sedatives because it seems to get worse with excitement. Just live with it. If there is something new on the horizon, speak to your veterinarian who can refer you to a veterinary surgeon and see what that might be. But as far as I know from today, there's really no great solution, surgical solution anyway. And we just treat it medically. We live with it. And again, it usually happens in older dogs anyway. I mean, much older. And they're usually the small breeds. I would just say, live with it. If you know of something that is new or you're a veterinarian or you've solved the problem with some kind of either medical therapy or surgical or a device surgically, please let me know. But until we know that, I am not recommending it. I don't recommend it to my clients, but I'm very curious to see what you guys think, et cetera. I'm doing a lot of waving. I want more questions. Try Meru's Nighttime Minerals, Jeff. Okay, that's good to know. I'll look it up. Mary Roots Nighttime Minerals. Yeah, as I said, I'd love to have something a little extra. I think I've got to everybody. All right. So any more questions? If you have any questions, now is the time. So there are a couple of stories that I wanted to share with you that I got last couple of weeks. So as we're approaching spring and summer, well, we're in spring already. I am concerned about something called salt toxicity. I've gotten a number of cases in the last week, actually week and a half, about dogs with not only potential salt toxicity from chilling at the beach, but also something called sand impaction. You need to be really, really, really careful with sand impaction. And so ocean water has a very high salt concentration. When dogs inhale, when they're swimming, but they're, you know, it's waving, it's rough, they're trust me, they are taking in a lot of salt water. That salt has an effect of retaining fluid. So when it gets into the blood, all the blood, even that goes into the brain, so you can get actually brain swelling because of too much salt in the blood. So you need to be really careful. Also, if they're running and playing in the sand and they're picking up sticks and you're throwing a ball or a frisbee, they are swallowing sand. Trust me, they are swallowing sand. You know what happens when you wet sand. You've seen it happen. You can just see it gets heavy and solid and it sits there. And then if it gets out of the stomach and then causes this sand ball, then it can cause obstructions. And unfortunately, it doesn't dissolve because there's always fluid going into the intestine and that it becomes a surgical disease. So if you have a dog that loves the beach and loves to chase things and loves to play frisbee, you need to limit the amount of time and how crazy they are with it because you do not want them ingesting sand. Very, very important because it can be a problem. And as I said, salt water. Now, people then ask me, what about salt pools? It's like our pool is salt water. The salt level in our swimming pools is not near the same as, and you can see that when you swim. I know my lab loves the pool. He's in the pool. He takes in a lot of water. So now that he's getting older too, he, you know, used to be in the water. His body was like this. Those back legs were just keeping that butt high in the air. And now it's kind of like this because he's getting weaker. And of course, he's going to take in some more and more water. So when they do that, it's okay. But again, ocean water is different and the sand is a concern, right? If they can't poop out the, now, if it's a small amount, yes, that'll continue to go through the intestine. But if it's enough to cause a large ball, and so it all really bases on volume, how much sand did they ingest? And that's how you know. So again, if it's a large amount of sand, it could be a problem. And then this was also great. We talked about, I don't know if we talked about this. So osteosarcoma, it's a death sentence. It is a tumor of bone that happens pretty much in large breeds. Any smaller breed that has genetically large breed in them. So don't be fooled when you get that mini Labradoodle or Golden Doodle. because you have a Labrador or a Golden Retriever in there, and those dogs are prone to bone cancer. So by doing this, it's a problem because it could be causing some future problem you have to watch for bone cancer. This is why, by the way, we've changed our recommendation when it comes to spaying and neutering, that we knew that there was a 65% greater incidence of long bone cancer in dogs that were pre-puberty neutered, which is why now we wait until they're very full grown, a year, year and a half for big dogs, giant breeds. I might wait 2 years before we neuter. So there is an experimental vaccine that might extend dogs' lives. Osteosarcoma, even with chemo and amputation, still has a very limited, you might be lucky to get, I don't know, anywhere from 9 to 16 months. So this is an immunotherapy vaccine that has shown effective prolonging of lives in these dogs that you still want to do the chemo and you still want to amputate. You don't want that mass sitting there, but it has shown that you can extend their lives longer. That's not on the market, still experimental phases. It got approval by the FDA to go through now trialing, and we will know more about it. But that could be a game changer. It's almost like the treatment, the vaccines, the injections, the GS541224 for FIP, feline infectious peritonitis. So it was a death sentence for years. We could do nothing about it. And now with this new medication, you have to get it online. For some reason, it could be FDA. I don't know. There's politics. There's definite politics involved. But we have a very effective treatment that in the hands, from my experience, I've had 10 or 11 cats get this treatment. And GS441524, and we just call it GS441 or GS44, that has literally cured the FIP. In fact, I just saw a cat this past week, gorgeous, almost looks like mine. It's an orange tabby, long hair. I mean, so magnificent that he's like a big, healthy kitten that went through the treatment when it was just a little kitty with FIP, and this cat is 100% normal. So we don't have access to this vaccine yet. I don't know who does. It's going to go through the appropriate testing, but keep your eye on it. What age do I consider a dog a senior? Really depends on the breed. For the small breeds, that might be 8 or 9. For large breeds, it could be 7, 6 even. Giant breeds could be 6. You know, hell, they only live to 9 or 10. So I start recommending annual blood tests, physicals, chest x-rays earlier in the giant, large and giant breeds than I would a small breed, as far as an annual regular type of exam. Now, of course, if any of these dogs at 4 or 5 needed an anesthesia, we would do some sort of blood test as well, just to make sure they're safe. But as far as considering it a senior would be then, anything to the diet. As a senior, usually if they are doing perfectly well, may not need to fix anything. However, as we know, they are more prone to certain organ dysfunctions. If it was a small breed, I might be more concerned about a kidney, a cat for sure. So you might want to start thinking about a prophylactic kidney or renal diet for these animals. Less fat. What happens is they get older. They have a tendency to do less. And then what happens, the less they do, the bigger they get if you don't change the diet. Sometimes it's changing the amount of food you feed, the number of calories they're ingesting. So it really depends on the individual animal, the breed, and your own thoughts about it, but their own health. When you do the blood test, when you do the work, you check the urine, the more changes you may see, the more likely we need to do something. If they're all perfect, don't rock the boat. Leave well enough alone. That's okay too. All right. We are out of time. That's all we have time for. Again, enjoy your Easter Sunday. If you are thinking about, you have kids and you're going on those egg hunts and there's chocolate this and chocolate that, be really careful, please. And if you're thinking of adopting a chick or a bunny, make sure you do your homework first, because it could be disaster, and we don't want disaster. We don't want these new cute pets ending up in one of the rabbit rescues, the House Rabbit Society, for example. So heart murmur, do x-rays real quick. There are many reasons for heart murmur. Some are clinical, just like in many women. Some are not, so some are clinical. First thing I do is I would start with an x-ray, and if the heart looks totally normal, there's no coughing, there's no clinical disease, and it's a younger animal, I would sit and watch. I'm much more conservative in my approach. If, however, the heart is enlarged, if there's some coughing, something that's changed in their behavior, exercise intolerance, where there's clearly some issue going on, where I would have, recommend an EKG, electrocardiogram. Now I'm recommending a cardiac echo. You get much more information. It's much more accurate. measurements are taken, blood flow is seen, the blood pressure through the different valves is being examined, and you can actually see the valve leaflets and make a much better diagnosis. And therefore, once you have a better diagnosis, a more accurate treatment regimen can begin. So my recommendation is start with basic x-rays. Now, if you have no access to echo, then you want to do an EKG. Yes, I'm not saying don't do it, but if you have access to someone, to a cardiac specialist or an internal medicine specialist who does cardiac ultrasound, then I would recommend that first, because that is the much better way to make a diagnosis and thus a treatment plan. So good. So we went to a specialist. Thank you. I'm glad the kidney levels are great. They did the ultrasound. Fantastic. That's good news. Okay. The sun is shining in Pasadena. Have a great day. Well, it looks like it's trying here on the west side, but it's not there yet. Still a lot of clouds in the sky. All right. Save your questions now. Too late for this show. Next week, we'll be here. Same bat time, same bat channel here on Pet Life Radio at 9 a.m. in the west, noon in the east, and whatever else is in between. Likewise here on Instagram Live here with Dr. Jeff. And we'll see you next week. Have a wonderful week and a safe day. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.